This morning we are beginning the series, Growing Through Giving. And so I thought it would be fun to start by talking about money. Money, money, money. And I know what you're thinking. Oh, great. 4 weeks on money. Now, let me tell you something. I know that no one likes the annual sermon series on money. And the person who likes it the least is the preacher. The problem is, I have found that Jesus talks about money more than most everything else that preachers find a way to preach on. Jesus seems to think that how we handle our money says a lot about our relationship to God and to each other. And so he talks about it a lot. But a lot of people would rather that the preacher just stick to something less controversial than money. You know, something like politics or sin. But I want us to look at four passages of Scripture over these next 4 weeks where Jesus teaches us something about money, not as a way to guilt us into giving more, but perhaps seeing how we might grow in our walk with Jesus by how we handle the blessings that God has given to us. So, we're going to talk about tithing and saving and paying taxes, and then about what exactly is the amount God expects us to give. But we're going to talk first and start about a tithe. So the question we're going to look at today is what Jesus teaches us about tithing. So some of you out there might wonder, well, what is a tithe? I hear this word a lot, but I didn't grow up in church, and so I'm not quite sure what you mean by that. Sounds like a funny word, which it is, because all it really means is one-tenth. A tithe is one-tenth of your wealth, one-tenth of your income. It is one-tenth of whatever you have set aside for a sacred purpose. And so in the Old Testament, we see the Israelites, those who are followers of Yahweh, the God, the Father of Jesus, we see them being commanded in a variety of places and in a variety of ways to tithe. Now, you don't have to look these up, but trust me, they're there. Okay, so listen to this. Genesis 14, Abraham gives a tenth of his wealth to Melchizedek, a priest king of the city of Salem, and he gives this in gratitude for receiving a special blessing. In Genesis 28, Jacob gives a tenth of his wealth to Bethel, the city of Bethel, after he receives a dream from God where he sees a ladder ascending to heaven. In Numbers 18, the Israelites have escaped Egypt. They've escaped slavery. They're in a midst of wandering in this exodus from slavery, and God commands them, each of them, to give a tenth of their wealth to support the work of the Levites who serve in God's wilderness tabernacle, the tent of God's worship house. Deuteronomy 14, think about this. Every third year, in addition to the tenth of your income to support the wilderness tabernacle, every third year you're supposed to give an extra tenth to support the widows and the orphans and the resident aliens, the immigrants who have lived in your city. In Nehemiah 10, after the exile, the Israelites return to the land. They've messed up. God sent them away. They've come back. And God says, guess what? We're still doing the tithe, y'all. Y'all is Hebrew, right? We're still doing the tithe. You're to give a tithe again to support the rebuilding of the temple and the maintenance of the worship of God. So taken together, biblically speaking, at least in the Old Testament, a tithe had these purposes. A tithe was a recognition of God's blessing, a response to God's promise, a support to God's servants, a gift to those in need, and the preservation of the worship of God. And all God asks, and all that God has given to you, is that you would give a tenth back for these sacred tasks. So that's a tithe. A tenth of your income given for sacred tasks. So you might ask yourself, well, that's the Old Testament. Should Christians tithe? That's a great question. And before I answer that question, I want to talk about a little bit of history behind how churches paid for themselves. So if you're not excited about a sermon on money, how about a history lesson? All right? Okay. Really quickly, in the New Testament, we see the early church supported by the generosity of wealthy converts to Christianity. People like Prisca and Aquila, people like Philemon, people like Lydia, they were wealthy merchants, wealthy businessmen and women, and they converted to Christianity. They set their faith in Jesus, and because they were wealthy, they were able to host the church in their homes. They were able to sponsor missionaries. They were able to support the growth of the church. And they did that not because they were commanded to, but because they knew that this was so important that they had to give all to support the church and its mission. But then something happened with the conversion of the Emperor Constantine. When the Emperor Constantine, the Roman Emperor, converted to Christianity, he decided the empire should pay to support the church. And so everyone's tax money went to helping support the church. And that policy from around the 4th century is still in effect in many nations, particularly in Europe today. Throughout the Middle Ages, throughout the Reformation, even into our own country in pre-colonial times, the tax revenue, a portion of that, was set aside to fund the church in every nation. That worked well because they're going to make you pay your tax. So when we did our offerings in church, it wasn't necessarily to support the ministry or pay the pastor's salary. Our offering could go to other things, could go to almsgiving, could go to helping other people, because the light bill was paid by the state. The minister's salary was paid by the state, right? Well, then comes along us Americans, okay? Now, look, I'm pro-American Revolution, don't get me wrong, right? But something happened in the Revolution, which was after the Revolution, we had the great idea of giving our churches freedom from the state. And so in our country, churches were no longer supported by tax revenue, and so they had to raise their own funds. And early in American history, churches had lots of great ideas to how to do this. Some denominations chose to send an annual bill to their members. So you had to pay dues to be in the church, right? Some churches decided they would go back to that policy of wealthy, generous people could support the church, right? And if you gave enough money, would name the thing after you, right? Johnson Memorial Chapel. Does that sound good? Mr. and Mrs. Johnson? Great. Now, one huge, huge way that churches raised money in the 19th century was by letting you rent your pew for the whole year, so that no one would sit in it without your permission. And it raised tons of money. And a lot of times the pews sat empty. Because you paid for it, you bought it, but you didn't go to church maybe. But it was there just in case you needed it. Now, this was so controversial though that the Methodist Church split over this practice. A whole denomination was born called the Free Methodist. And the word free meant that the pews were free to all. Even today, after the Methodist Church of today repented of our pew selling, even today in the Book of Discipline, our rule book that all of us have to follow, us preachers particularly have to follow, there is a rule in our book still to this day that says, the pews of our church shall be free. So how are we going to raise money? Well, after the Civil War, a new movement called the Sunday School developed. And the Sunday School began to teach this Old Testament understanding of the tithe, that a tenth of your income should be given to the church, and Sunday school leaders would collect it and would encourage you to bring, and slowly and surely this began to flow throughout all the churches. And here's the thing: you think, okay, what does that have to say? This is what it meant. The idea was, every single Christian had a responsibility to support the work of the church. And the tithe meant that even though we could not give equal amounts, we were all asked to make an equal sacrifice. So the wealthiest member or the poorest member had the same opportunity, the same responsibility, and the same privilege, because everyone was asked to give a tenth. And so all of us could make a sacrifice to do that. But you might be thinking, well, that doesn't answer the question, Ricky. Should Christians tithe? So what does Jesus say about it? And that's what I want to read to you today. Because honestly, Jesus doesn't explicitly command us to tithe. But listen to what he does say. In Matthew 23, he's on this long yelling tirade against the Pharisees, all right? And in all of chapters 22 and 23, Jesus is yelling at the Pharisees because the Pharisees have turned God's law, which is intended to make us understand to love one another and to love God, and they've made it a list of do's and don'ts. And he says this in chapter 23, verse 23. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, you hypocrites, for you tithe mint, dill, and cumin, and have neglected the weightier matters of the law, justice and mercy and faith. It is these you ought to have practiced without neglecting the others. You blind guides, you strain out a gnat but swallow a camel. Now, Jesus is mad. And he's mad because the Pharisees have so much time on their hands to focus on the minor details. And they want to make sure that you are giving an exact tenth of everything, down to the spices in your cabinet. Mint and dill and cumin, salt and pepper, right? A tenth of all that you have. And if you don't give it, the Pharisees think God doesn't love you. And this flies all over Jesus. And then he makes fun of them by pointing out something that the Pharisees were known to do, which is before they drank anything, the Pharisees would often carry around a little strainer, like a kitchen strainer, and they would pour the water because they would want to make sure that they didn't accidentally swallow a gnat. Because bugs are not kosher. And he says, you look ridiculous, Pharisees. You're over there straining out bugs and you're swallowing whole camels because you've missed the point of what this is about. This is not about God micromanaging your every step, your every moment. This is about giving you the opportunity to support, to love, and as he says, the weightier matters of the law, to do justice, to love mercy, and to walk in faith. And then he says this, you must do all these things without neglecting the others. So yes, you should tithe. But your tithing should be understood as not a way to earn God's love, and you should not be so focused in the details that you neglect the overarching reason. And this is what it is. The law of tithing is about giving to God our first and our best. That's what I hope that you take home this week. The law of tithing is not about getting the exact details down to the decimal point, but it is asking each of us to consider, are we giving our first and our best for God's purposes. The tithe is asked of us not to earn God's love, but in recognition of God's blessings, in hopes of God's promises, to take care of God's servants, and to take care of the least and the lost and the last. And God asks you to do that first, and asks you to do it with your best. Why first? Because God knows us. And God knows that we will find ways to spend that money. And so giving to God first, whether it's first of the month, first of the week, first of the year, when we give to God first, we remove our own temptation to find other ways to spend it. And more importantly than how much, I want you to ask yourself, is this the best? I know we all have different financial situations and different responsibilities, and so your best this week may be 1%. Give it your best. And next week, the good news is, you can try to be better. And every year ask, am I giving first to God, and am I giving my best to God? Because some of you you've zoomed past 10%, and you're so generous, you're giving away money more than you're keeping. There's still the question God's going to ask you, is that your best? Because God wants us to give our first and our best so that we can join in God's mission of transforming this world. So should we tithe? Can I tell you the honest truth? It doesn't matter. What matters is, in all that you are, all that you have, and all that you do, are you honoring God with your first gift and your best gift? The percentage will take care of itself if you focus on that. In just a few moments, we're going to gather around God's table. We're going to break bread, and we're going to share from a cup and remember the night that Jesus gave himself up for us. And when we do that, I want us all to remember that in Jesus, God gave his first and best and only Son for us. And all he asks us in return is to love him with our first and our best self. We should tithe, but more importantly, we should live always offering God our first and our best self.